see the skyline and I'm home again.
All right, everybody, it's Mike Jeffers here, and this is ChicagoJazz.com's podcast, and we are here with Jeannie Tanner, a great musician, Chicago musician. We're going to talk a little bit about all of her life history and all of the different things she has happening on the music scene, but also more importantly, you just came out with a brand new album, and the brand new album is called Music and Words, and it's not just
Words and Music.
Words and Music. See, I'm even looking at it and I screwed it up.
I do that with lyrics all the time.
Well, I should be able to read two words in the right order. Words and Music, and it not only includes her, but it also includes 12 different vocalists from around Chicago, which I'm sure many of you are going to know their names, but also you wrote all the music, and you wrote the music specifically for those artists. So we're going to get into that stuff and in depth, but why don't we talk a little bit at first. Jeannie, how did you get involved in music? Because you're a multi-instrumentalist, I like to say. So how did you first get involved in music?
My family.
Yeah.
Through church. Yeah, I have a very gospel-oriented sort of background with my religious upbringing in Texas.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Houston. We're in Texas. Houston.
Houston. Houston. Okay. Houston, or Houston, as they say
Houston,
in New York. Yeah.
The humid part of the state.
That's exactly right. It's perfect. So yeah, my dad worked for the government. We moved all around, and in our travels, I just picked up different instruments, and of course, family reunions. One of my cousins played a French horn, somebody else played a trombone, trumpet, everything. So I would just pick it up, and it was cool. It was like, I got that gene. I didn't get the money-making gene, but I got that gene.
Well, you thought you had the
gene. I did, yeah.
Thought you had the money-making gene, and then you got involved in music. So,
yes.
So anyway, so you're in Houston, and how did you end up... I guess so you're
in
playing
Chicago.
You're playing all these different instruments. Maybe we should talk about that. I mean, did you focus on one, or did you always have, because you play piano, you play trumpet, you were telling me before we started, she plays drum sets, probably six other instruments I don't even know about.
Well, my parents, it was a rule in our house to play music. You had to play piano first and get the basics of music. So that's how I started. And then I quickly moved to trumpet. My aunt actually played trumpet, cornet in church, and I always loved that. So I picked that up. But I kept playing piano, just sort of developing it, and it became more of a songwriting tool for me. I was already writing music by the time I was 9, 10. And so that's sort of how I started, you know, developing my piano chops. But I would never have called myself a piano player. But so trumpet became sort of my focus, and then of course I always sang in church, and then on to college, and then played in some corporate wedding things, and then sort of went out.
Did you major in music in college?
I did.
Oh, okay. What college?
Northeastern here in Chicago. I had a full scholarship there, but I also had opportunities at Northwestern, at Illinois Wesleyan, and Northern. And I couldn't decide if I wanted to go to college. So by the time I decided that that's what I was going to do, the other offers were gone, and I was able to still stick with Northeastern.
Well, and Northeastern, who was teaching there when you were there? Maybe they're still there.
I don't think so. Like Dr. Horn was over the jazz band.
Because they had a good jazz band program
over
there.
Jazz
band.
I actually met Branford and Winton when they were like.
Really? Yeah.
With their dad. He was the
with
the
Alice?
Guy
he was
yeah,
the, okay.
Yeah, it was like the late 80s, early 90s, something like that. So he was the guy. And they were just sort of the upstarts coming. So, yeah, so that's sort of my background in music and education. And then everything else I just sort of did on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to raise my stool up. That's the beauty of editing. I'm looking at that thing. I'm like, what am I freaking like sitting in a hole here?
I like to make sure everybody's below me.
Yeah, well, okay, Don. Mr. President.
Seriously. Let's not go there.
No.
Anyway.
Okay. All right, so you're up here. That's probably how you ended up here then, right? Coming up to school? Or no, wait, you
no.
must have come up here earlier.
My
then.
Dad worked for the government. He was with the VA. He was in charge of the volunteer services and also their PR.
Okay.
Which is kind of where I learned a little bit about, you know, marketing and doing that sort of thing from him.
You're like a marketing machine these days.
Well, you know, you have to be. You have to wear 1,500 hats if you want to be successful.
That's right.
And keep working. So we moved all over the country. He transferred to take, to get promotions. So we lived in Brooklyn. We lived in Queens. We lived out west. You know, we lived in Fresno, California. We lived from sea to shining sea. And we ended up actually in Vernon Hills.
Oh, okay.
And so then that's how I sort of migrated into Chicago. My folks left. My dad got transferred again, and I was like, not going this time, Dad. Staying here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And I called Chicago my home. So.
So did you immediately go into school at that point, or were you working and doing other things at that point?
I went to school, and then I only stayed in school for a couple of years, and then I started working in a very successful corporate wedding band, and I did that for a few years. And then I decided to go out on my own. A very funny story. Orphans over on Lincoln, owned by the guys at Beat Kitchen, right before they closed.
Mm-hmm.
So what, early 90s or something. And I was used to having like a dressing room and all this kind of stuff and whatever. So I walk in from my first gig there and I was like, where's the dressing room? And Alan was like, well, honey, you can either go in the alley with the boys or we have a ladies' room. And I was just like, okay. I was so naive.
He probably looked at you like, what?
Oh, he was just like, oh, another diva, I'm sure. And I was just, like, this is what I was used to.
Right. Where's the dressing room?
Yeah. Okay, then. Okay, honey. Check out the alley with the boys. You're good to go.
So that was like your first gig on your own once you got out of the thing? You put a quartet together or something?
It was actually a duo. I was doing pop R&B stuff, and then I went on to have a much bigger band, and we would play the Cubby Bear and things like that. And
was
then
that under your name, or was it? Yeah,
it was me. And so, yeah, we would sell at the Cubby Bear and do, it was still original. You know,
oh, really?
Yeah. I write pop. I write just about everything. But anyway, and then went on to run a nonprofit for 6 years. I sort of took a detour. And when I stopped doing that, that's when I sort of got into the jazz.
Oh, okay.
Blues kind of thing.
Okay. So. Well, and so then let's talk a little bit about that, because you have how many recordings? Like 4 or 5?
Nine. This is my ninth.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't. And they're all, that's all in the jazz genre, or is that some with that other group that you had?
My very first album was called Anytime, Anywhere. And it was a pop R&B thing that I did in the '90s. And then after that, I did an instrumental, just trumpet, called Out of the Blue, another recording. And then after that, those that line between. And then after that, I started producing myself, and that was Tanner Time was my first sort of foray into. Well, you guys reviewed it.
I remember Tanner Time.
Yeah, I think
it's that marketing name right there, Tanner Time. I was like, wow.
Well, and it was a funny, I got the name from one of the, a lot of the musicians I worked with, because I would early on, now I don't do that, but early on I would be cutting it close, getting to the gigs, and so they'd be like, Tanner Time, I'm much better now. But anyway, so that was sort of the origin of that name. And I didn't realize when talking to radio promoters early on that it was like, people in the jazz community might think that's a little egotistical or blah blah blah. And I was like, it's just a funny name that we
right
it's no big, it wasn't like Tanner Time, she's so great. No, it's Tanner Time, she finally got here. Okay.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about the original stuff, because I find that really interesting. When I was coming up, going to school and everything.
North Texas.
North Texas. There it is. The drumline jacket on the wall over there.
I love that.
It's just a reminder of,
Whiplash.
Anytime I start getting stressed and I have like zero sleep and stuff, I just look up at that jacket. I go, oh. Not even close to what was happening with that. But, I was always told, and that's how I learned, is that I had to learn, as a drummer, you got to learn Baby Dodds. If you can't play Baby Dodds, you can't play anything else. So you got to learn from Baby Dodds all the way up through all the great drummers, Sid Catlett, everybody, all the way through. And that just, you build up that repertoire. And then once you do that, I do think a lot of people, they don't ever progress on to writing their own music, because they get into that scene, they are playing that music, and they get locked in, and there's so much to that music that they feel like,
oh God, you can spend a lifetime.
Yeah, they have to keep learning and learning and learning. But I feel like in the past 10 years, there's been like this wave of jazz musicians starting to write their own compositions. Now, you were writing way before that, but you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, you know, from learning from the classics and the legends and then writing your own stuff, where do you feel like, you know, percentage-wise, where people should be or where you were maybe?
You know, I don't think that there's a set formula. I think everybody's, you know, their experiences inform their creativity. And I was just fortunate enough to, I mean, here's a really old story from my parents, but when one of my earlier albums, Promise Me the Moon, came out, and Rose Colella covered that for me on this
right.
Word to Music.
Yep.
Yeah. My mom was telling me, both my parents were telling me that I used to, when we'd be driving around in Houston before we moved, I would be singing in the back and I would be watching the moon and singing moon songs. Now, I don't remember. I was 3 or 4 years old. So flash forward, you know, what, 30 years later. And there I am writing, you know, Promise Me the Moon. But I think that it just depends on who the artist is. I just started writing songs first. I could read a little music because I'd studied a little piano and I was taking trumpet, but that creative part of me was always going. So I think it's, frankly, I think that it's wrong to tell people that they should not write until they've learned whatever. I think it's backwards. I mean, the Beatles didn't read music. There's so many pop musicians that don't read music. There are many jazz musicians who started out, what was it, Gene Krupa? He couldn't read music when he first
right.
did. He was a
right.
drummer. He was just a drummer, right?
right?
So
not
I
a
think,
musician.
He was amazing, you know? You know, he was like a god, and then he had to learn how to, if he wanted to play big band charts, he had
right.
to learn, you know, read music. So I think that for me, the ironic part of that is when I first sort of hopped into the jazz blues scene, maybe like the early 2000s, mid-2000s, I had to work backwards and learn the repertoire that I should know as a vocalist because I'd always done all my original music. And so I'm still learning. I feel like I'm still playing catch up. Every time I see like Paul Marinaro or Arlene Bardell or Elaine or all these great, they like are so light years ahead of me in terms of their repertoire because I've always been doing my original stuff and I still do. I, you know, probably 50 to 60% of everything I do at a gig is my own music. Which thankfully I can do that, but
right.
but I'm still learning, and I just don't think that you should tell people how to create. That's just my own personal
right.
opinion.
I think there's probably a fine line, you know, as far as that stuff goes, and you probably agree with me that you have to learn the basics. You
oh,
have
of course.
To learn all of that stuff, but when
at
you
at some one, point,
right? Well, yeah, right. But you know, it's one thing to know, you know, 500 tunes or something, but it's another thing to know 40 tunes but really understand the harmonics of what's happening in that tune
totally.
Because as you know and as most of our listeners and viewers know with jazz a lot of them are based off of a lot of the same chord changes
right.
you know rhythm changes things like that so I think once you focus on that and really nail it down I think a lot of people have a problem sometimes when they're writing their own music is getting away from actually like not overanalyzing what they're doing because they're not writing from their heart. And I feel like you write from your heart, right? Because you're
I
like what you just talked
time,
about.
Yeah.
But don't you find that difficult though sometimes? Because I mean, maybe not with you, but you know, from my standpoint, we get so many CDs in here and stuff that, you know, I can hear, I think it's going another way because I'm, and then all of a sudden they make a right turn and go, I better not do that because that's not that cool. So I better come back in here. So they never really experiment out of their element. So I guess my question in a long, long drawn out way, that's what I'm known for.
Me too. So this is great.
is
my answers. Get to the point, Jeannie. Where are you going? Where'd you go? Oh, she took us to a place we didn't think we were going. Oh, now that's, she's back.
That's and we're not even drinking. See, that's a just imagine if that
is
happened,
too early?
Folks. Sponsored by Tito's, the second
Woo!
Half of this interview. But I guess my point is that, you know, with you seem like you have a lot of ideas coming around in your head and you just keep, you're not afraid to take it where you want it to go. You're not afraid if you say, well, this isn't actually structurally correct. I'm not going to do that. You're not afraid of that. You take it where you feel the sound is going to go. I mean, do you ever think that way or is that just naturally like I'm
you know,
going that way?
It is really natural. And that's where I really feel like I'm just blessed from my parents. Both my parents were songwriters. My dad lived like country and gospel and my mom wrote some church stuff. And, I just hear it, and usually I can sit down and at the piano and write a song 15, 20 minutes. Everything comes at once. The melody, the chords, it just, I can write in my car. I can have it and then go home to the piano and, you know, and immediately just sort of write it. But to challenge myself as a songwriter, because I think you always have to, you want to keep getting better at your craft. I've had people say, hey, can you write a song about blah, blah, you know, for some TV and film projects that I've done? And yes, I can. And it's a different part of my brain that has to work because I have to, again, work
That's
backwards.
Really difficult, though,
yes,
too.
It
a
is.
Lot of people can't do that.
But I can, and so that sort of really helped me with words and music when I was writing a handful of these songs specifically for these singers, was able to talk to them about, you know, what do you love, who do you listen to, what's your range, what do, you know, do you have any kind of particular, you know, storyline or any kind of lyrical reference that you're thinking of, and that informed my ability to then just sit down and be like, okay, well, let's... And thankfully, every song that I wrote for these performers, like, spoke to them as an artist. Because
yeah.
I think that's really important. Like, and I would tell them, listen, if this is not rocking your world, I'll write you something else. I don't get offended. Like, it's a song. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. Like,
right.
I'll go back to the drawing board and I'll do something that works for you.
Right.
And so that's sort of from my heart. But I can do it from my head, and then they have to kind of work in sync, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this, because this leads us right into, what a segue,
vids
huh?
Vids and music, yes, vids and music.
So how did you, let's talk about who's on the recording. I'm going to let you name everybody off here.
Oh,
here we go.
You're giving me that job. I have to count in my head. So Alyssa Allgood, great young singer in the city. I'm sure a lot of people are getting to know her. She's does more of a bop sort of, you know, vibe to what she does. Just, and she writes. She's a lyricist as well,
right.
and has composed some really nice songs. Rose Colella, who I just love as well, and she's sort of got that Blossom Dearie kind of, but can swing. I mean, she's just really, all these vocalists, I'm huge fans. You'll be able to tell that as I'm talking about them. Elaine Dame, the Dame. How can you not love Elaine? She's got, man, she's got chops. She can swing. She can sing anything. She's got a great range. Kimberly Gordon, she's another one. What does she have, like a 6-octave range? I mean,
mm-hmm.
She's just, wow. Paul Marinaro. What can you say about Paul that's not already been said?
That's right. That's right.
He's amazing. And that beautiful baritone voice that he brings to it. And again, writing for a male voice, very fun for me.
Sure.
Like, you know,
sure.
Sort of branching out. Tammy McCann, another huge voice, huge talent. Jeff Megan. Now, a lot of people don't know Jeff. Jeff is a TV and film composer, but he does do a few live things. But he's more of in the studio kind of guy. But he's got this beautiful, just, we met through our TV and film, one of our agents out in L.A., and she described his voice as, it's like butter. And it is. It's just smooth. He does the bossa on the album. It's just smooth. It's just beautiful. Tiffany Monique. She just came out with a great new album, I think Call It Magic, and wow,
right.
It's magic. I was shocked that she was said yes to this project because it was right in the middle while she was finishing hers, but just consummate pro, again, amazing vocalist. Andy Pratt,
mm-hmm.
who guitarist, he's also, I think he's got a new release coming up soon.
Does he?
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got such a distinct vocal style. That the song that he ends up singing, I'm Whistling a Tune, it's just sort of like a throwback to like the 30s. That sort of like Django kind of just sort of, you know, it's just such a cool vibe. It feels like he just stepped out of the radio from the 1930s.
Yeah.
It's got that vibe to
yeah.
it. It's just so amazing. Of course, Abigail Rickards, I think she's working on a new album, a new holiday album this year. But again, she's just an immense talent from New York now a Chicagoan. Michelle Thomas, beautiful, soulful vocalist. And Amy Yasinger, who is also kind of new on the scene, but boy, she can swing, and she's doing a lot of the corporate wedding stuff,
right.
too. But
yep.
She's also, you know, does the club work, and she's beautiful, pure, just a pure sound. So
yeah.
I think I got everybody. Let me just go. I think that's 12.
Sounded right
we'll
to me.
We'll find out if I didn't.
Sounded right to me. Leave a comment below if she didn't mention you. For those of you watching us online.
Alyssa, Rose, Elaine, Kimberly, Paul. Who we got? We got Tammy, Jeff,
oh, see, now you're
Tiffany.
Trying to do it again. Now you're in trouble.
Abigail, Michelle, and Amy. Hey, I nailed it.
There it is. There it is.
I do. I have to kind of tick through in alphabetical order, making sure I hit everybody. So anyway, great group. Amazing.
So let's cut 1 second.
All right. Seriously, do have to do that. I have to count.
I don't know how you do it because I would be like, oh man.
I was doing a podcast for Art Section with Gary Zydek at WDCB, and I just reeled him off, and he was like, he's like, you got to memorize. I'm like, okay, we've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, right. A couple of years. You think I know who's coming?
I hope so. Or I'm really in trouble.
All right, here we go.
There you go.
And action.
Yeah, actually, I should clap so I can sync it up.
There we go.
Okay.
And scene.
And scene now. Okay, so you wrote, I've got to find out, how did you decide on all these people? Now, you're friends with a lot of them and you know all that.
Yeah,
did you have them fill out a survey? Did you?
You know,
sweepstakes.
I honestly, there are so many talented vocalists in town. It really came down to who I felt would be able to interpret the songs the best and who I felt I could write for at this point. Now, having done this now, I'm excited. I want to, you know, I've talked to Dee Alexander. I want to write a song for her, and I want to write a song for Lynn Jordan, and I want to, there's all these people that are just, I mean, Chicago, people don't realize how many amazing musicians and are in town and artists. So I sort of thought about what I was going to do, and then I just started approaching each singer separately, and every single one of them, without fail, said, absolutely.
And they all liked what you wrote for them, or
yep.
was there a back and forth a little bit on things?
No,
or they
you know,
pretty
the
pleased?
Only, no, everybody was incredibly excited about what I was writing for them, and I gave them that option. I said, you know, if you want to jump in lyrically, there's one line in Remembering, which I wrote for Paul, which... and that's totally his idea for the song. But one of the lyrics, he sort of changed. I think it's in the second B section, the second verse. But I actually co-wrote lyrics with Tammy McCann on her song. Because I'd written the music, and I was really trying to, exploit's not the right word, but, you know, really highlight her incredible, like, range, as they
right.
all have, but just sort of in the particular, like, you know, the pocket that she sings in. And I really felt I had that down, but lyrically, sort of had the chorus part, the A section, but lyrically I was still sort of like, and so she was at the house, we were kind of running through it, and she's like, you know, I have a couple of ideas, can I? Yes.
Yeah,
so
right.
She and I were the ones, we'd be texting each other, she'd be like, what do you think of this? I'm like, oh my God, that's great, let's do that, you know, so
yeah.
That was cool. But that was probably the most in terms of like the basic creative sort of whatever with it. Everybody else that I wrote for, you know, Rose and you know, Tiffany had been listening to some old Etta James and Little Jimmy, what's his name? Little Jimmy, not right, Little Jimmy.
Vocalist?
What is his name?
Jimmy?
Jimmy, Little Jimmy. Oh, God, sorry, Tiffany. Anyway. Started listening to those two vocalists, especially Etta James, and so came up with her tune, which she really loved, and then we wanted to add the strings on it to sort of give it that At Last vibe.
Right.
Not, you know, Dan wasn't like, I didn't say, hey, he's just like, well, let's just, you know, like kind of figure it out. I'm like, sort of like the intro of At Last, but not.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, just you were talking before about it, sort of a reference, sort
yep.
of a homage to that song. It's such a great song, and then having Tiffany do that. So everybody was incredibly excited. And then, like, Elaine took one of my songs that was on Tanner Time called Red.
Okay.
And I had always felt like my scatting was like, whatever. So, you know, I mean, you know.
Like, whatever, nobody could touch this? Or
no,
what?
Like, whatever. Like,
kidding.
I wish I could have a reset button. I wish I could redo it, you know. So Elaine came along, and she completely changed the tempo and the vibe. Wow. So it was that sort of everybody, every single vocalist had a say. They were an important part of the arrangements for songs
okay,
that I
sure.
were already in my catalog. And then, of course, I wrote... for five of the vocalists, specifically songs for the album. So that was an experience, too. It was really fun.
Well, and also recording the album was an experience, right? So now, is Matt Fetterman your producer and engineer? Is he the engineer? Or
He's both. Okay. And then Dan Murphy was music director and also co-producer.
Okay.
So Matt and Dan and I worked. We were sort of the triple threat, as we like to say.
And,
and
did you record this in your house?
We did.
Okay.
Except the strings.
I was going to say, it had to be your house, because if it was in somebody else's house, they would have told you, what are you doing in my house all the time?
We just went to a couple of neighbors. We're like, hey, yeah. Do you mind? But
that's got to be let's talk a little bit about that. So Matt Fetterman, he's the one that engineered it. He mm-hmm. set everything up. He went in and looked at your house and figured out acoustically how to do it.
Right.
I mean, you and I both know a lot of recording people out in L.A. That's the way they all do it now. I mean, it's like they don't even go to studios. It's all done in their house for the most part. I mean, they'll burn out tracks and send it off, and now it's on a TV show or something. So,
well, Beck, his album of the year a couple of years ago, you know, Pop Album, he did it in his house, in his living room. So
yeah. Well, and then you think back, right? I mean, Led Zeppelin used to rent out, you know, a house for eight
That's
months
true.
And record
That's
in
true.
A house for 8 months.
Yep,
I mean,
yep,
that was
yep,
their
yep.
studio, you know.
Fleetwood Mac, I think they did the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, with doing that, that has to be something from a creative standpoint that just relaxes your mind, because you're in your house. You don't have to run to a studio. You don't have to be in somewhere. You're not looking at your clock the whole time. You're not saying time in, time out, get in, get out, and all that stuff.
Every single musician, every single artist that was on the record, especially the vocalist, were like, oh my God, this is the most pampered that we've ever been. You see, because the music part of it that we recorded in basically three sessions in mm-hmm. the house, like 3 6-hour sessions, Dan pretty much ran. We went the arrangements, whatever, but when it came to that time, you know, my job was to make the vocalist comfortable. Susan, it was her job to have the margaritas ready. And no, but we were just, you know, we lit candles. It was actually in our family room where the vocalists were. And then we just shut the French, you know, whatever doors. And so they were just like, they were so comfortable.
Yeah.
And that was because I do this all the time. So I know how it feels to be on the other side of the glass. And you know, you want to be able, as a producer, so I produced all the vocal sessions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dan did all the...
So you guys tracked everything before, mm-hmm. and then when the vocalist got there, there wasn't a pressure,
was
there wasn't a band.
It was sort of a two-part approach. So we had the vocalist for the most part, except Tiffany. She had an out-of-town gig, so I tracked her parts.
Mm-hmm.
We had the vocalist there that week to make sure that the arrangements were the way that they wanted them, the tempos, which we already set up in pre-production meetings. But, you know, when you start doing
it. Scratch vocals down on everything. Yeah.
And then, so the band would record. So the music you hear is probably 1-2 takes at the most of the band. Some of the vocalists nailed theirs initially, but they wanted to do a few more just so we had them. You know, so then we would have, I allotted for about 45 minutes for each vocalist. Then the band would take a break, and then they would just kind of do a few passes, see what they liked.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few vocalists came back, weren't happy with what they did, so they would come back. They came back throughout the summer and did a few more passes. So, but that the music that you're hearing, that was all recorded during that week.
Yeah.
And on our old Hardman piano from like 1920, whatever.
Hey, man. Sounds good. That's it, right? Doesn't matter.
Sounds good. I have, you know, we had it tuned every day, and you know, then Dan had his tools. He's sort of, you know, tweaking it too. But so that's sort of how we ran it. And then Dan wrote most of the horn parts.
Okay.
And then
sure.
I ran those horn sections. And then except for "Kiss Me," I wanted that to be more organic. That's like a second line, one of the tunes that Kimberly did. Second line, New Orleans kind of vibe. And so Chris Madsen, Adam Thornburg, and myself came up with those horn parts sort of organically while we were recording. So
oh,
that
nice.
Was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then we recorded the strings at Electrical Audio because we just felt like there might be too much of a risk of some outside noise or whatever. You know, they're so porous with their the wood and everything. We didn't want to do that. And so we did Electrical Audio. And then, of course, I kept putting my parts off some of the solo stuff I was doing on trumpet because I was trying to get everything else done. So finally, I think it was like end of December, beginning of January, Matt's like, Jeannie, you need to get your horn stuff. And I was like, oh. So we recorded my horn solos at his little, you know, he's got a home studio up in Highwood. And so we did it there. So it's three very different acoustical environments,
mm-hmm.
and he just masterfully put those together, and then he and Dan and I all worked on the mixes, and then you know, Brian did you know, the mastering. So it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Well, I mean, it came out incredibly.
Yeah.
It came out incredibly. Now we should talk a little bit before we close things out because we're already at like a half an hour, so we're jamming along here.
Are the drinks Tito? That's coming soon.
I got a bottle of Tito's over there, actually, but
actually, I'm more wine.
I have things to do, and you have to work
tonight.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm more wine. I'm more wine and beer, by the way, too. So don't send Tito's. Well, you could send Tito's. Send it. I'll do something with it. So we're talking about this. You have a show coming up. You just did one at City Winery.
Yes, it was wonderful.
And you recreated the whole album. Mm-hmm. And you had the string section. You had everybody there. This was the big CD release. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. It was packed. Awesome
Sold
job.
Sold out, multimedia. It was wonderful. You were in the audience. Thank
I was
you
in
for
the
coming.
Audience. Yeah, it was dynamite. And you're going to do a smaller version of this August 11th and 12th at Andy's coming up.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. Now, that's two nights. So are you going to switch vocalists each night?
Yeah, so I'm still sort of getting the lineup together, getting everybody's availability. Yeah. But we'll have basically the same band both nights, except we won't have the strings. It's not quite large enough to sort of do that there. But we'll have the vocalists coming by. So we'll have each night will be a different lineup. But we'll be doing music from, you know, the songs from Words and Music. So and then I'll be there with my quartet. So I'll be doing some tunes, too. Very excited about that. I'm working on a couple of other venues to do more of, try to recreate that again.
I mean, that's a huge undertaking.
Yes, it is.
Not beyond everything else, just coordinating 12
schedules.
I mean.
You know what I like to say? The Cubs won the World Series. It was a miracle. And it was a miracle. I got all these wonderful, amazing, talented Chicago like artists to be on the record. And then they actually were at the CD release.
They showed up. So every 108 years, Jeannie will have.
Well, and Tiffany especially, you know, she had her CD concert coming up that Friday at Old Town, which was amazing.
Right.
And she was just so supportive. Everybody was. I mean, you know, the inside thing was there were a few people kind of looking in like, well, who was the biggest diva and what was it? I have to tell you, honestly, nobody. This was a show about complete collaboration. A really wonderful project for our Chicago jazz community, and none of them are divas. I mean, we're all working musicians at different, you know, doing different types of things across the city and traveling around the world, some of the folks who were on the album. And everybody was just such a team player. I mean, it really, even with Matt and Dan and I, every decision we came to together, the only really funny quick story was, I'm not a huge fan, I apologize, of organ. B3.
Sorry, Demos Petropoulos.
Sorry.
Kimberly Gordon's
No,
husband.
I love, you know what, it's growing on me.
My wife doesn't like it either. It took her 6 years to finally enjoy Joey DeFrancesco live only.
I'm now getting a new, I guess it, just not enough exposure to it. So now I'm really kind of getting a new, sort of a love for it, but I did not have that initially.
Don't lie, it's just a liking for it, not a love. I know how this goes.
So Dan and Matt on Michelle Thomas's track, which that one actually was co-written, the music by Lisa McQueen. Mm-hmm. And we'd done that. That was on Promise Me the Moon. We released that. But anywho, getting to the point. So they were both like, they started working on me. It took them 3 weeks. They're like, you know, it'd be so great. We're going to be at Electrical Audio to put B3 on that and have sort of a thing with Neil Alger played guitar and that, just have like a trading thing with the solo section. I was like, yeah, you know, probably not. And in 3 weeks, they just, every time we'd have a mixing session, they'd be like, you know. And so finally I was like, okay. And I love it. It's fantastic, actually.
Yeah.
And Dan played the B3 at Electrical Audio, but by the way, that was the other.
Oh, nice.
Just
yeah.
amazing. Yeah. He did actually a video we got of him of playing Take Me Out to the Ball Game because I think the Cubs had just won. So we have him with his hat on. It's pretty funny. But so that was kind of a funny, like, haha. But anyway, we all, even that decision, you know, they both were like, listen, if you don't want to do it, that's cool. And I said, you know what? I want to be open. That's the reason I'm working with two other producers. I usually produce my own albums all the time. So that's why I want this. I want your input. So let's do it. And it sounds great.
It adds that soulfulness that it needs sometimes,
like that
you can't
gospel,
always get.
Soulful,
yeah.
Just, oh, it's great, actually. So I do love it now. I love the B3. I love it. I'm going on record. Love it. Love.
All right. Mark it right now. There it is. It's marked. All right. So before August, though, you play like 5-6 nights a week. So if people want to come and experience Jeannie Tanner without 12 other vocalists and a gigantic production, you have your quartet playing out a lot, and then you're also playing duos and yeah, solos, I should say. Yeah.
So Wednesdays I'm at Perry's Steakhouse in Oak Brook.
Mm-hmm.
Thursdays I'm at Pete Miller's in Evanston. You know how it is, diversify your stream of income. So right. I do TV and film writing and get placements and various things. So, and I'm excited. Next project, I'm hoping to work with Sarah Marie Young and a few of the other amazing vocalists around town and do some things to be guest vocalists on my upcoming album.
That's what I was going to ask. If this is like volume one, if there's going to be possibly a volume two.
You know what I think I'm going to do, because it really is a huge undertaking and with scheduling and that sort of thing. I think what I'll do is have two or three guest vocalists or musicians, maybe we'll do it because I write instrumental music too, on my upcoming albums. So Sarah, our schedules didn't quite work for this album. She wanted to be a part of it, but it just didn't work out with some of the things she was doing. But she's excited, so we're hoping to have her and a few of the other vocalists around town. And just sort of every time now that I release a new album, I will be writing music specifically for some other vocalist in town. And
oh, that's cool,
yeah, I'm
man.
Excited because I had so much fun, and I think everybody else had a really good time, so...
Yeah, well, you opened up a brand new door there. I mean, it's like a whole other door for you now, as far as writing does.
Songwriting, you know, composer, yeah. Sort of my coming out party as a songwriter, even though I've been doing this for, 20 years, writing music and recording it. Very different when you have somebody else sing it.
Yeah.
You want to sing a track?
You don't want me singing a track. I sang once. I sang Way Marie, you know the tune Way Marie, Louis Prima? I was playing drums. I'll tell everybody this. I was playing drums for Frank Lamphere.
You want to hear
this. This was 15 years ago. And he goes, why don't you sing like the Way Marie, because I know all the words, to everything, that because I would hear it all. I'm like, yeah, okay, Well, I sang, he goes, oh, Marie, and I go, oh, Marie, and I'm playing drums. I can't even find a pitch. And he goes, it happens three more times, and then he just goes like this and turns my microphone off. Didn't tell me. I go, how did it sound? He goes, it sounded much better once I turned your microphone off. I'm like, okay. I'll play drums.
Well, you know what? I do want to do something where I have like two drummers on a couple of tunes, like some funky or jazz stuff.
Count me in.
Sign
me up.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Sign me
up. Maybe record it here.
Well, we could get in the elevator. We're in this gigantic warehouse. A lot of you, watch my vlog, you've seen some of it. You're going to start seeing a lot more because I'm doing this other vlog that'll show up on my YouTube channel here on Chicago Jazz Music. And
thank you, Mike Jeffers.
But I have two huge freight elevators that have lots of echo in them, so what better than
I think
trumpet and two drum sets.
Oh,
there's your
God.
Next album.
I think that would rock.
Recorded in a freight elevator.
Matt, are you listening? Get ready.
Yeah, get ready. You can blame it all on me. All right, so they should go to, what's your website?
GeneTanner.com. And the albums are available on CD Baby. You can download it at iTunes or Amazon. Also buy physical copies, CD Baby and Amazon. So, or just contact me and we'll work something out and I'll autograph a copy for you. Get everybody on the album to autograph it for you. So.
And we'll have everything linked up down below and all of that good stuff. Well, good. I'm glad we finally made this work.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm glad you made it down here. So we're going to go out listening to a track here from Words and Music. Why don't you decide what track we should hear on the way out?
Oh, no, it's like your children. You can't have a favorite. I'm going to have you do that.
All right, we're gonna pick something video-wise, most likely, and we'll drop that in. And again, Jeannie Tanner, jeannietanner.com, right?
Yes.
jeannietanner.com.
Mm-hmm.
And August 11th and 12th at Andy's Jazz Club. And that will do it for this episode.
Wait. Yes. Shout out to Mike Jeffers and Chicago Jazz Magazine for all the support you give all of us in Chicago. Oh. We really appreciate it. Seriously.
Well,
thank you. Really
thank you.
It.
I'm glad you guys.
Thanks
I'm glad you
me.
Came on.
Me
I'm
too.
Glad you came on. All right.
Glad I found it.
Well, the way that you move me, I could go all night. Mm-hmm. I said the way that you move me, baby, I could go all night. Yes, it's the way that it's just the way that you love me. Money says.